Well, good afternoon, everyone. I think it maybe would be appropriate that I apologise. It's a good way to start a speech, isn't it? By apologising for not being here earlier, but I suspect the reason why the Minister was not here, you can maybe deduct it similar to the reason that I wasn't here. And as most know, I'm an MLA for Fermanagh South Tyrone. I suspect very soon I'll be saying I'm a former MLA for Fermanagh South Tyrone. If the news that's breaking all around us today is anyway accurate then. But that's the way things are, and that's how it is. And as Ursula has said, this has been quite a journey for me and quite an experience. And during the time of my bill, I've met some wonderful people, and I have met some wonderful friends, and I've made friends, and I have to say I have made some enemies too. But then such is the life of a politician. We don't go out of our way to make enemies, but sometimes we do that in the things that we do, and perhaps even the things that we say. But I'm going to be as brief as I possibly can, but there are some things that I do want to say. And just at the very outset, I want to thank the Law Centre for inviting me along here to offer my reflections on the Human Trafficking and Exploitation Act as part of this conference. Now, it feels like a very long time ago, now that I brought the Human Trafficking and Exploitation Bill to the floor of the Northern Ireland Assembly. Between February 2012, when I had initial conversations about bringing a bill to the Northern Ireland Assembly, and Royal Assent in January 2015, the Human Trafficking and Exploitation Bill was a significant part of my life. Indeed, I have to be truthful, at times it consumed me. It was a difficult process, and I would be untruthful if I said different. But looking back, I feel it was worthwhile, and I think I'm privileged to have brought it forward. In reflecting on the Act, I think it is helpful if I set out what I hope to achieve when I brought the legislation forward. I need to give a bit of context, which will take us back over 3 years ago. Some of you will have heard this before, and I apologise for that, but I think it is helpful in terms of considering the intention I had when I brought the Human Trafficking and Exploitation Bill. The story of the Human Trafficking and Exploitation Bill actually began with the passage of the EU Anti-Trafficking Directive in April 2011. There is something ironic about that, in that it is well known, and I openly confess it, that I am not the greatest fan of the European Union. But with that said, let me say, the EU does from time to time produce some good things, and this directive was certainly one of them. Some of you may remember that the UK's response to the Anti-Trafficking Directive, but for those who hear, I'm going to give a short version of what actually happened. In 2010, the Home Secretary, Theresa May, initially announced that the UK would not be opting in to the directive. But following a huge lobbying campaign, the UK government decided to U-turn and opt in, and I think that's a very good thing. However, as those of you who are familiar with the vagaries of the how an EU directive affects a member state know, opting in is only half the battle. The crucial part is how the member state decides to implement the directive. The UK government's initial response in the Protection of Freedoms Bill indicated that they were going to implement the directive in a minimalist fashion, doing the very least possible to be compliant, rather than trying to implement it in a fulsome way to provide greatest benefit to victims. More importantly, the changes made at this point did not apply to Northern Ireland. But I felt that the Department of Justice in Northern Ireland was inclined to follow the UK in a minimalist approach to the directive. Consequently, in February 2012, I arranged for the drafting of a bill which would more comprehensively implement the EU directive in Northern Ireland. I had heard about the plight of victims of trafficking here, and I felt I was in a position as a member of the Legislative Assembly to push for further action to help them. In 2012, the Minister introduced the Criminal Justice Bill to make two important changes to the law, similar to the Protection of Freedoms Act, as I had anticipated. The changes allowed human trafficking offences committed abroad to be prosecuted in Northern Ireland and made internal trafficking within the UK a crime. These were good changes, but I felt it did not go far enough, so continued to pursue my proposed private member's bill. I launched a consultation on my bill in August 2012. I think it is safe to say that the department at the time were not best pleased with me for doing so. I detected that from them. But thankfully, over time, the department came to see the value of the bill and ultimately played a pivotal role in ensuring the bill was as effective as it could be. The bill that I brought forward had three main goals, which were rooted in the principles outlined in the European Directive. Firstly, it sought to improve support services for victims of trafficking and exploitation to ensure that those who have suffered from these crimes are appropriately supported and cared for. Secondly, it sought to reduce demand for human trafficking and exploitation in Northern Ireland through a variety of different measures. Thirdly, it sought to ensure that perpetrators of these heinous crimes are effectively punished. If you were to look at the bill that I first introduced and the final bill that the Northern Ireland Assembly passed, you would notice that there are very significant differences. This is not a bad thing. My bill was very closely scrutinised by the Assembly, and this led to significant improvements. The Department of Justice's constructive approach to most of the bill also led to a better piece of legislation. We also took into account the introduction of the Modern Slavery Bill at Westminster, making amendments to ensure that Northern Ireland adopted many of that bill's positive provisions. However, the aims of the legislation never changed throughout the process, and I believe that the Act now will enable us to achieve my objectives. At this moment, it remains early days with regard to the impact of the Human Trafficking and Exploitation Act. Royal assent was only granted, as we already heard, in January of this year, while some of the sections, those pertaining to independent guardians for trafficked and separated children, and assistance for individuals who are seeking to exit prostitution, have not even commenced yet. It is still too early to assess the success of the Act effectively at this point. However, I do think it is worthwhile noting three observations about the Act has had and having at this particular point. Firstly, I think it is manifestly obvious that the passage of the Act through the Assembly has raised awareness of the fact that Northern Ireland, that human trafficking and exploitation takes place here in Northern Ireland. This is not a claim in any way that the passage of the legislation has been the only source of awareness raising. I am well aware that the many NGOs and the Department of Justice have been tirelessly seeking to raise awareness of human trafficking in recent years. But I think that most observers would agree that the passage of this Act has raised the issue up the news agenda in our society. Secondly, it has been striking to me the fact that the Human Trafficking and Exploitation Act has had on other jurisdictions in the United Kingdom. This was something unusual for a piece of Northern Ireland legislation. Traditionally, we follow behind the rest of the UK rather than leading the way. For a start, the Scottish Government's proposals in this area are in many senses strikingly similar to the Act that the Northern Ireland Assembly passed. This is especially the case with regard to the aspects of the Scottish Government's proposals with regard to support for victims. I also know that the Act had an effect on the British Government as they brought forward their proposals in the Modern Slavery Bill, now an Act. Indeed, a government minister even went so far as to praise Northern Ireland's legislation on the floor of the House of Lords. So the Act is having a ripple effect beyond Northern Ireland. My third observation would be that we are now seeing the first prosecutions brought under the Act against perpetrators of human trafficking offences in Northern Ireland. Many here will be aware of the recent recovery of a number of potential victims of human trafficking for the purposes of forced labour in Newton, Hamilton and Belfast. I am hopeful that the victims of these crimes will be supported effectively by the provisions in the Act and the statutory agencies in Northern Ireland. I also hope that the new offences outlined in the Act will be easier to prosecute and that the perpetrators involved will be punished to the full extent of the law for what they have done. In closing, I just want to outline some of the aspirations that I have for the Act and its impact on human trafficking and exploitation in this province. I have three main aspirations for the Act going forward. During the final stage of the Human Trafficking and Exploitation Bill, I made it very clear that I know that it is the implementation of the law that really matters. It is all very well producing a piece of legislation, but regardless of how good it is, if it is not effectively implemented, it will be of limited benefit. One of my main aspirations for the Human Trafficking and Exploitation Act is for it to lead to a reduction in the number of individuals trafficked into Northern Ireland. I am not so naive as to believe that we can eradicate human trafficking entirely. I wish we could. We have had laws against murder for centuries, but it has not eradicated murder. I think that trafficking will still occur in this society regardless of what the laws we put in place. But it is my hope that the new law will help to reduce the demand for the labour of trafficked people in Northern Ireland, whether that be in prostitution, industry, agriculture or domestic work. Ideally, this society would be a very hostile place for those who seek to abuse and exploit others through the crime of human trafficking. Secondly, I want Northern Ireland to be seen as a model society for how we deal with those who have been victims of these heinous crimes. Having met some victims of human trafficking and heard their stories, like many of you here today, I want to ensure that these people are effectively supported when they are identified as victims. I strongly believe that a number of provisions of this Act will help. Survivors now have guaranteed statutory rights to access a variety of support services. Access to compensation will hopefully become easier as a consequence of the passage of the Act. The introduction of independent guardians for trafficked and separated children should also help support children who are undoubtedly some of the most vulnerable people who ever find themselves in this province, protecting them from further exploitation. And I think we have struck the right balance in trying to ensure that victims will not be criminalised as a result of offences they commit as a consequence of being trafficked. It is my hope that not only will Northern Ireland be a place that offers compassion and support to those who suffer this exploitation, but that other countries will look to our approach as an example. Finally, it is my hope that the Act has given the PSNI the tools it needs to identify perpetrators of these crimes in Northern Ireland, and we will see more prosecutions and, crucially, more convictions. I hope that the revised offences will be workable in the courts and that the new minimum sentence will help to ensure that those who commit these crimes receive suitable sentences, demonstrating the seriousness Northern Ireland places on these crimes. So just to finish, I want to thank again the Law Centre for inviting me to speak this afternoon. There's a lot of excellent work going on in Northern Ireland with regard to tackling human trafficking. I have been hugely impressed by the NGOs I have encountered during my journey with this bill, and I want to encourage you to continue with the good work that you're doing. And could I also publicly thank all those that I have worked with closely. You have helped inspire me to take this bill to its very end, and I also pay tribute to the Northern Ireland Assembly, who at the final stage of the bill passed it unanimously. And I think that is something, to the Assembly's credit, in a day when they're much criticized. Mm-hmm. Thank you.